Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Swiss Life presentation of the Q1 Results 2022 conference call and live webcast. I am Sandra, the Chorus Call operator. The conference must not be recorded for publication or broadcast. At this time, it's my pleasure to hand over to Matthias Aellig, Group CFO of Swiss Life. Please go ahead, sir.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for dialing in and for your interest in Swiss Life. Today, we are reporting on selected top-line figures for the first quarter of 2022. Please note that all figures quoted are in Swiss francs and are unaudited. All growth rates mentioned are in local currency. Let me start with today's key messages. Fee and commission income was up by 14% to 579 million. Asset managers grew by 20%, owned IFAs by 2%, and own and third-party products and services by 12%. Gross written premiums, fees, and deposits received increased by 3% to 6.9 billion. All business divisions contributed positively. Insurance reserves, excluding policyholder participation liabilities, declined by 1% to 173 billion compared to year-end 2021, mainly driven by capital market developments. Swiss Life Asset Managers recorded net new assets of 1.2 billion in third-party asset management, or 1.9 billion excluding money market funds. Direct investment income increased to 0.97 billion. The non-annualized direct investment yield was 0.6%. The non-annualized net investment yield stood at 0.9%. The SST ratio on the 1st of January 2022, as disclosed and filed with FINMA, was 223%. As of today, we estimate our SST ratio to be at around the same level. I will now move on to our segment reporting, starting with Switzerland. Premiums increased by 1% to 4.3 billion. The life insurance market was down by 2%. Premiums in individual life were down by 3%, while the market increased by 1%. Periodic premiums grew by 2%, while single premiums were down by 19%. Premiums in group life grew by 1% to 4.0 billion, while the market decreased by 2%. Single premiums increased by 6%, primarily due to higher premiums from employees entering existing full insurance schemes. Periodic group life premiums declined by 2%. This reflects the growth of the semi-autonomous business, which results in lower reported premiums. In that business, only risk and cost premiums are recorded, while the savings components are recorded off balance sheet as asset inflows in the respective foundations. Assets under management in our semi-autonomous foundations increased to 6.3 billion compared to 5.6 billion at year-end 2021. As previously mentioned, the reported premium development demonstrates our continued focus on disciplined underwriting. Fee and commission income slightly increased to 83 million, driven by Swiss Life Select. Turning to France. Premiums increased by 8% to 1.9 billion. The market grew by 3%. In our life business, premiums were up by 9% due to continued demand for our pension and savings products. The market was up by 7%. The unit-linked share in our life premiums was 61% compared to the market average of 40%. Life net inflows were 0.6 billion versus overall market net inflows of about 8.7 billion. Health and protection premiums grew by 7%, mainly driven by the group business. P&C premiums were down by 3%, primarily due to fleet and home insurance products. Fee and commission income rose by 25% to 111 million. Unit-linked fee income increased based on higher average unit-linked reserves compared to the prior year period. We also had a strong contribution from the banking business, driven by exceptionally high revenues from structured products in a volatile equity market environment. I will continue with Germany. Premiums grew by 5% to 390 million due to modern traditional, and disability products. The market increased by 4%. Fee and commission income rose by 3% to 160 million. The number of financial advisors increased by 18% year on year to 5,733. This top line development needs to be put in the context of an extraordinary benefit in the prior year period of around 15 million from a successful campaign based on the solidarity surcharge, as mentioned throughout 2021. Excluding this prior year benefit, income growth would have been 14% in Q1 2022. Moving on to our international unit. Premiums increased by 2% to 272 million due to higher premiums with corporate clients in the global employee benefits business, while premiums with private clients slightly decreased. Fee and commission income was up by 12% to 87 million, primarily driven by high contributions from our owned IFAs, both in the UK and CEE. Let's continue with asset managers. Asset managers' commission income rose by 20% to 241 million. This included the first-time consolidation of the Nordic company NRP, acquired end of 2021. On a like-for-like comparison, income growth would have been 15%. As usual, the update on asset managers in Q1 and Q3 focuses on commission income and does not include other net income from real estate project development. In our PAM business, commission income increased by 4% to 93 million due to high transaction fee income. In our TPAM business, commission income grew to 149 million. Recurring income increased by 30% or by 23% on a like-for-like basis, excluding the mentioned consolidation of the acquired company in the Nordics. Non-recurring commission income, such as transaction and performance fees, increased by 6 million year on year. To make figures comparable to full and half-year disclosures, the share of total non-recurring income for TPAM, meaning commission income as well as other net income, e.g. from project development, was 19% of total TPAM income, compared to 14% in the prior year period. Net new assets in our TPAM business amounted to 1.2 billion compared to 2.9 billion in the first quarter of 2021. We achieved good inflows in real estate in real assets of 0.6 billion. Inflows in other asset classes amounted to 0.4 billion in bonds, 0.7 billion in balanced mandates, and 0.2 billion in equities, while money market funds reported an outflow of 0.6 billion. Excluding money market funds, net new assets amounted to 1.9 billion compared to 2.0 billion in the prior year period. Overall, assets under management in our TPAM business were at 102.3 billion compared to 103 billion at year end 2021. The reduction, despite net new inflows, was due to less favorable capital markets and a negative FX translation. Turning to our investment result, our direct investment income increased to 0.97 billion compared to the prior year level of 0.95 billion. Equity and real estate contributed positively, while income on bonds decreased. The non-annualized direct yield was stable at 0.6%. The non-annualized net investment yield was 0.9% compared to 0.7% in the prior year period. The increase is due to a positive P&L contribution from equity hedging and other derivatives. We also had positive changes in real estate fair values. Hedging costs were still at prior year level. Those positive effects more than compensated for the lower investment result from bonds. Unrealized net gains on equities amounted to 2.4 billion compared to 3.3 billion at the year end 2021. Unrealized net gains on bonds amounted to 4.7 billion compared to 12.1 billion at the year end 2021. With respect to the real estate portfolio, changes in real estate fair values amounted to 0.6% compared to 0.5% in the prior year period, both on a non-annualized basis. Vacancy rates increased slightly to 4.2% from 4.0% at year-end 2021. In the context of the recent increase in inflation and interest rates, our real estate portfolio continues to be attractive, with about three quarters of total rental income indexed to inflation or higher rates. Moving to solvency, cash and payout. Our SST ratio was 223% on the 1st of January 2022. As of today, the SST ratio is at around the same level and therefore well above our ambition range of 140 to 190%. Liquidity at holding today amounts to around 0.9 billion. This takes recent cash remittances to the holding company into consideration, as well as outflows related to the dividend payment and the ongoing share buyback. Our 1 billion share buyback is on track with more than a quarter completed as of today. As announced, it runs until the end of May 2023. Let me sum up. We are very pleased with the first 3 months of 2022 that also mark the start of our Swiss Life 2024 program. 2022 so far has come with clearly higher interest and inflation rates. Also, in such an environment, we confirm all our Swiss Life 2024 financial targets. We will start with our progress reporting within our half-year 2022 investor presentation. Thank you for listening. I am now ready to take your questions.
The first question comes from Andrew Sinclair from Bank of America. Please go ahead, sir.
Firstly, just on reinvestment rates, just really wondered if you can give us some context on what sort of reinvestment rates you're getting today with rates going a bit higher and how that compares to your earned rates. Secondly, was on asset management net inflows. Just if you can give us a bit of an idea of phasing through the quarter for different asset classes. Was there a big change in March or was it just a quieter quarter overall? And thirdly, was just on the competitive environment for Switzerland, has there been any change? I know you want to talk about specific competitors by name, but AXA did comment that they'd been able to write quite a lot more business in Switzerland in Q1. So I just really wondered if you can give us any thoughts on the Swiss environment. Thanks.
Okay, thanks a lot. For the question first, in terms of reinvestment rates, indeed we have seen higher rates. If we look at the first quarter of 2022, our reinvestment rate is maybe 2.3% as we speak. This is clearly above last year's reinvestment rate. Back then it was 1.4%. 1.5% alike. And for the full year, we clearly also expect somewhat higher reinvestment rates than the 2.3 that we have seen in the first quarter. However, please keep in mind that there's only a relatively small share of our investments that come due every year. Maybe that's on the first question. On the second, the phasing within the first 3 months, I think there's nothing particular to note. It's by the nature of the business we have, I wouldn't call it erratic, but you know, deals come in, they do not come. It's nothing special to note here compared to prior years. This is a business where we have quite some big tickets, and the timing is by the nature not very predictable. So nothing specific to note there. In terms of the competitive environment, you know, as we reported, we have seen increased, let's say, activity in the tight asset, in the semi-autonomous business. As mentioned, we on various occasions, this does not fully translate into the premium development. The reason being that we have most of the semi-autonomous, let's say, inflows, the savings part, not recorded as premiums in the P&L. But also, let's say, the group life business overall, I would say, it's okay. So nothing particular to note there as well.
Super helpful. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
The next question comes from Peter Elliott from Kepler Cheuvreux. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much. I had three questions, please. The first one, I guess, is similar, very similar to Andy, so apologies for going back on that. But it seems to me that the semi-autonomous market has been sort of strong, you know, very strong overall in Switzerland. I'm sorry if we're going over the same ground, but I'm just struggling to understand, you know, what might be driving that. I'm just wondering if you can give any comments on the market or the demand overall, rather than the competition from suppliers. The second question was just on France. Thank you very much for the additional detail about the structured products success. Are you able to give us any sort of numbers on that, just to sort of understand the weight of that versus the unit-linked momentum? And then finally, I'm possibly being greedy, but just on the asset management, sometimes just wondering what insights you can give us in terms of the outlook past Q1 for the rest of the year. I mean, I guess you've sometimes sort of given us insights into what non-recurring proportion, you know, you might expect for the year. And I guess you've had a little bit more experience on flows since the end of the quarter. But just wondering if you can add anything sort of post the Q1 cutoff. Thank you very much.
Okay, thanks for the question. Maybe first on the semi-autonomous part of the business. Or let me first talk about the second pillar market in Switzerland at large. So both semi-autonomous, autonomous, and the full insurance market. I mean, this market is growing essentially at GDP. I mean, Switzerland has a growing workforce. We just have heard about a multi-year low of unemployment rate in Switzerland. So there is structurally a growth of that second pillar market overall, and we are aware that there is, let's say, a lack of, public figures on, for example, the semi-autonomous part. We know what the full insurance market is. But if you now think back, and I talk about Swiss Life, we have been clearly tightening the underwriting in the full insurance solution, which just makes that part a bit smaller. So there's intrinsically an increased focus on the semi-autonomous and the autonomous part. And I think that what has been, happening in the market. And in addition to that, you know, that's something that has been observed in the past as well. After a couple of, strong equity market years, there is increased interest in semi-autonomous, solutions anyway, irrespective, of the effect of the underwriting that has been tied in the full insurance market anyway. So that's a couple of thoughts on the semi-autonomous market. Now, in terms of the structured products in France, they have really contributed quite a significant share of the growth in Q1 of the fee top line. It's only more than half. This was driven by the volatility in the equity markets that was particularly high in the first 3 months. So we do not expect this extraordinary benefit from the bank to repeat for the second, the third, and the fourth quarter, but the bank is well underway overall. Maybe that's a bit on the French question. Now, in terms of the asset managers, the outlook, as you say, we typically indicate also a bit the share, the total share of non-recurring income. Again, that's both fee income, but also this other net income from project development. We have had 27% in the full year 2021. We expect a bit a lower share this year. Having said that, it's by definition a bit difficult to predict, but we, as said, see a bit a lower share of that for the full year in asset managers' TPAM business.
That's very helpful. Thank you very much indeed.
The next question comes from Pauline Liang from Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead.
Hello, good morning. Thank you. I just have two questions, broad one. The first one is just want to confirm that you mentioned that your investment, net investment results, was helped by the hedging you put in place, which more than compensate the bond market movement. But does that mean that if interest rate, assuming they're putting on when you say the bond, is that the interest rate related? So if interest rate goes down from here, would that actually reverse? I guess that's the first question. The second one is also I wanted to understand a bit more about the broader kind of business outlook. If the volatility of the market, especially equity market, remain very high. When I say kind of your expectation on the business, I specifically like, for example, your impact to your unit-linked business, impact to your structured product selling, and as well as the impact to the the remaining like the third party IFA sales, which will fit into your fee income. So thank you.
Thanks for the question. Maybe in terms of the hedging points, let me make first a statement. The bonds we have on our balance sheet, they do not flow to the P&L, because we carry them at what we call available for sale, and they only go to the P&L if we realize gains or losses on bonds. So there's no mark to market in the P&L for bond investments. What we have observed, and I think we have been talking about that effect for many years, for many, many years now, the reinvestment rates on bonds have been below the coupons that were maturing, and that's, a secular trend of the current income on bonds that we reported over the years. The point I've made on the derivatives was the following. We hedge our equity portfolio, and when markets decrease, clearly the hedging derivatives appreciate in value, and that goes to the P&L, whereas the change of the underlying equity does not go through the P&L, we have reported a decrease of the unrealized gains on equities. They have come down by about 0.8 billion or so year to date. The other hedging I was referring to was the foreign exchange hedging, the FX hedging. You know, we hedge both the FX bonds, the US dollar, the euro bonds, for example, we hold on the Swiss balance sheet. We hedge there the underlying, and we also hedge the hedging costs of those for those bonds. And these fair value changes have also gone to the P&L, and given the rate differentials and the movements, this has had a positive impact. Looking forward, the increasing interest rate differential will mean we will incur higher hedging costs now going forward. Maybe that's a bit the more detailed story about the hedging. Now, needless to say that we have on that also the policyholder sharing, all those movements we just explained are clearly pre-policyholder sharing, which pick up the large part of the movements anyway. Now, in terms of what happens if the volatility in the equity market stays high, I think the simple answer is the very large part of our business does not, let's say, depend on the equity volatility. And we picked out this positive effect from the bank because there we offer structured products. These structured products, they play the volatility in the equity markets, and they have met large demand in the first quarter of the year. And so this may be a pocket of our business where we have, let's say, or where we could take advantage of such volatility. The other business overall, I would say, is nothing particular to mention. The only point I'd like to make, and that's an observation we have seen, for example, already 2 years ago in the COVID context, you know, our unit-linked customers, for example, in France, they do not get nervous once equity markets get a bit shaky. You know, maybe 10 years ago, this pattern has been different, but 2 years ago, we have seen that even if markets tanked, they have more seen it as an opportunity than a threat.
That's really helpful. Thank you.
The next question comes from Thomas Bateman from Berenberg. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for taking my questions. 3 questions from me. I just want to touch on real estate valuations and yields. You reported revaluation gains again. Can you split out how much this is attributable to refurbishments and how much is just general real estate increases in your core markets? And secondly, you noted that 75% of the real estate assets are linked to inflation or interest rates. Can you talk about the affordability of tenants in your core markets and consequently your ability to pass on rent increases to those tenants? And finally, just in France, clearly things are still very, very good here and kind of above your 6%-8% guidance for the strategic period. I guess I'm asking, is there any upside to this guidance, or is the shape of the transition maybe to unit linked you'd expect to be faster in the early part and maybe slower in the later part of the plan? But yeah, any color on the France guidance, fee guidance would be helpful. Thank you.
Okay, maybe first the question on the real estate, you know, refurbishment, that's part of normal business. And if we invest in, let's say, a certain amount, this amount typically increases the value of the property, but that's not per se a P&L effect. So to cut it simple, so the very large part of that 0.6 billion is not, let's say, refurbishment, but that's, let's say, what is going on in the market. Because, as you know, we do calibrate, or not we, our external valuation agent makes the assessment of the portfolio, and that's essentially what's going on in the transaction market, the 0.6% that I have mentioned. The second question, the inflation protection, the three quarters that I gave is essentially something that is anchored in the contract. You know, on the commercial part, it's simply part of a contract where you say what share of inflation is passed on, and in the residential area, it is a level or a link to the average interest rate of the mortgages outstanding, and that's the way this transmission works from higher inflation or rates to the rental cost for the tenants. That's, in that sense, a contractual thing that is at work. Now, in terms of the French question, I'm not fully sure whether I fully got it. What I can say in terms of general outlook, we have still very high interest in our pension solutions. We are growing strongly, not at the same pace maybe as last year, but we continue to see high demand for the pension solution, and we have also now a bit more than in the past also focused on the savings part, both of which have a very high unit-linked share. The pension block of business, the periodic premium, longer-term part of the business, the pension part has typically a higher unit-linked share than the savings part, but as said, we are above the market in both cases. So we continue to offer attractive proposition there to our clients, and I think that's what I can give in terms of outlook, even though I have to admit that's things that we have mentioned in the past. So
I guess where I was coming to on France was, I think you're giving guidance of a CAGR of about 6-8%. I appreciate there's a bit of a tailwind from the bank channel this year, but you're 25% up in local currency. It seems quite a long way ahead. That's why. Sorry, just coming back on the real estate, I think I was going more towards, like, do your tenants have the ability to pay these higher rents? Or do you see any pressure that, I don't know, there'll be increased vacancies or defaults there?
Yes, I wouldn't see any point why tenants could not afford it. I mean, the business in Switzerland is going well. I mean, we have, as I mentioned, a very low unemployment rate, business activity is strong. So I wouldn't see any point why these payments could not be, let's say, afforded by the tenants. And I think at that point in time, it's important to note, when we talk, for example, inflation in Switzerland, we have had 2.5%, I think in March. This is far below what the figures you may hear from the US or from Europe. So the related, also increases in rents are obviously much smaller. What also may help as also an indication for the business activity in Switzerland, we keep seeing increased migration into Switzerland. So we have a positive momentum here. So no concerns that these rents could not be afforded by tenants, be it on the commercial or the residential side. Coming back to your question about France, yes, indeed, the 25% are higher than the indication we gave at the Investors Day. But that said, we have one quarter, and this quarter that we now have been reporting has had this very strong extraordinary benefit from the bank due to the special quarter in that we had. So we do not expect that to repeat for the following quarters.
That's great. Thank you very much.
The next question comes from Jimmy Fan from UBS. Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you for taking my questions. I have three questions, please. So the first one is about interest rates. And given its move materially year to date, how will it impact your reserving assumptions and profitability models? Presumably, you can use a higher assumption in terms of long-term investment return and maybe more also in terms of your discounting rate. Can you give a bit more color on the mechanism here? That'll be super helpful. And I guess also on that, what will be kind of the impact on your kind of local statutory earnings and solvencies as a result? I mean, these are key to your cash upstream. And my second question is on real estate. I think given you know the interest rate has a direct impact on mortgage and the cost of borrowing, and those are kind of one of the factors influencing the real asset price. Could you give a more kind of comprehensive view in terms of the key demand and supply drivers in the Swiss real estate market currently? And my last question, did you say, sorry, I didn't catch it quite clearly. Do you say the cash position, cash at holding at 1Q was 1.9 billion? Thank you.
Okay, thanks for the question. I start with the one of interest rates and the reserving positions. Yes, indeed. I mean, given that the rates have increased more than probably all of us have expected, let's say a couple of months ago, there's clearly less pressure on the reserving side. There may be low numbers, there may be pockets where there are releases. I think the key point to keep in mind here, what has been working when we had lower rates, namely that the policyholder sharing was in place, is also working when it goes the other way. So there may be less pressure on the reserving, but there's also policyholder sharing of that when rates go up. That's the point on the reserving. The same clearly holds true for the solvency. You know, we have indicated the sensitivity of the SST ratio to rate movements. I think the most recent one is that what we have disclosed at the half year 2021. We will provide an update at the half year for the 1st of January this year. But generally speaking, that's a small percentage point number for a 50 basis points shift. So there's nothing particular to note there. In terms of local statutory accounts, clearly there is a benefit similar to what we have discussed for IFRS, lower pressure on the reserving, but also the policyholder sharing, which is at work there as well. Over time, that's what we have mentioned before, we will benefit from the higher reinvestment rate, but also this one is, let's say, subject to the policyholder sharing. Now, coming to the question of the interest rates on the real asset market, you know, the dynamics and the demand, you mentioned the link to mortgages. You know, we have seen clearly this further positive change of fair values in real estate, in the segments we are in. That's, let's say, showing the underlying demand for this kind of assets. You know, they offer, as we said, quite some good inflation protection, and we see continued demand for that asset class. For us, like many other institutional investments, we do not finance this kind of investment with mortgages. We have, let's say, the policy, all the funds we invest for that. And so we have there probably a different dynamic than what you may read from what individuals face in terms of financing costs when they have their mortgage rates going up. That's maybe the question on the real estate. The third question was on the real estate valuations maybe. As said, we continue to have a positive outlook for 2021. We have said that we continue to expect positive fair value changes, maybe a bit less than in the past, but that's, I think, what we can say across all the markets we are operating in.
Hi. I think just on my third question was about the cash liquidity number.
The cash that we reported was now let me check whether I find the number. It was 0.9 billion as of today, and this includes, let's say, all the movements that we have had since the year end. That's namely the movements relating to dividends, share buyback, and the like. So it's not 1.9, it's 0.9.
Yeah, got it. Thank you.
The last question for today comes from René Locher from Stifel. Please go ahead.
Yes, good morning all. Three questions, if I may. So first of all, just out of curiosity, these inflation-linked rent increases, I have learned from real estate company PSP that they are using the November CPI from Switzerland, and then the updated rents will come into force January next year. I was just wondering, you know, if this is the same with Swiss Life. And then the second question is on, you have reported strong growth in IFA in Germany, and I have seen an article in Süddeutsche commenting that BaFin is looking into too high costs for life insurance distribution. So I was wondering if you have heard something out of Swiss Life Select in Germany. And last but not least, it's big picture question. I mean, a lot of discussion on interest rates, the analyst notes with investors. So I was just wondering the CFO view on rising or higher interest rate. Is it positive, negative, or neutral for Swiss Life? Thank you.
Okay, thank you for the question. You know, to be frank, I cannot comment whether we use November or December, whatever kind of date for setting inflation. It's right, there is some lag between, let's say, the reading of the inflation and, let's say, the rent becoming effective. I don't know whether that's 1 month, 2 months, or to be frank, there is a lag, but it's not something that, let's say, worries me, to be frank. Mm-hmm. I think it's a key that we have the ability, unlike for a bond, to have this transmission of higher rates and inflation to the cash flows. So I think that's, for me, the key point. Whether that's 1 month or 2 months, I think that's less of a concern for us. On the second point, yes, we have, as you said, seen this growth in the German advisor base and also in the fee income. As said, we have had this prior year benefit. We have heard that BaFin is looking into that. We do not expect their follow-up on that would lead to a cap of distribution costs or anything like that. Mm-hmm. I think that's the comment I could make here. In terms of rising interest rates, you know, we have a business where we have quite some assets, fixed income assets. This is something that people talk about, but from an economic perspective, you know, for a life insurance company, we see clearly benefits. I mean, overall, that's a positive. I will not go into great detail and make boring, long, lengthy statements about it. Overall, as I said, it's beneficial. You know, some of the benefits, as referred to, may take a bit longer to materialize, such as the reinvestment rates. We may see in the very short run some other effects. We talked about the reserve releases or the lower strengthening. You know, there are many things at work. On the life insurance, I think that's the statement. It's beneficial, but there's the policyholder sharing on it. In the other businesses, in terms of the IFA business, yes, there is, whenever something changes, there is a need for additional advice. So I think there we have also a good thing. On the asset management part, you know, clearly there is, don't need to tell you that, AUM go down, fixed income valuations come down. So, sorry to raise that point. There is maybe here and there a couple, some less millions in terms of fee income, but overall, as I said, we see that as a positive development.
Okay, thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, that was the last question. I would now like to turn the conference back over to Matthias Aellig for any closing remarks.
They are very short. Thanks for your interest in Swiss Life and for your questions. I wish you a nice day. See you at half year. Bye-bye.